Welcome back to Inside Public Accounting, the podcast where we give you the data and the stories behind them. I'm Rob Brown, and joining me as always is Chelsea Summers, Executive Director of Inside Public Accounting.
Hey, Rob. Great to be here today.
Chelsea, it is great to be with you. Today, we're talking about something that every accounting firm leader thinks about, but I'm not convinced they're acting on strategically, and that's benefits. Well, we could wrap it up in comp, and it's not just what you pay people, but it's that full picture of what it actually feels like to work at your firm.
And I think this is one of the topics where firms can really differentiate themselves if they're being intentional. Compensation gets most of the attention. It's really the number that everybody focuses on. But increasingly, the join and stay decisions are being driven by a lot more than the salary.
Yeah, we hear a lot about corporate brand, but what's your employer brand like? This is what we're talking about here. And Chelsea, you've got some really rich data from the 2025 IPA Human Resources Report to ground this conversation. So 326 firms participated in the survey. You get a great take up for those. And you've now got a pretty meaningful picture of where the profession is going, haven't you?
Yeah, and I think it also shows what some firms could be doing differently to help differentiate themselves.
Well, let's set the stage. If we're about being aspirational and clickbaity, we could maybe name this episode Beyond the Paycheck, Building a Firm That People Actually Want to Join. But just set the scene for us here. Why is this conversation especially important right now?
I think the talent market has shifted, but it hasn't softened as much as some firm leaders may have hoped. Firms are still competing really hard for the good people. And what we're seeing in our data is that compensation alone is not solving that retention problem. Voluntary turnover is still running at 71% of all turnover. That means people are choosing to leave. And when people choose to leave, it's rarely just about the money.
Yeah. And if you're a regular listener to the show, you can check out the previous episode where we went into turnover, didn't we, Chelsea? We did that deep dive and we went into the numbers. So what we're seeing here, firms are investing more in compensation and yet they're still losing people.
Right. And I think that tells us that the investments need to go broader into the full experience of what it's like to work at the firm, which is what we're going to talk about today.
Yeah, I joked. I think in the last episode, I saw a firm advertising that one of the perks about working with them was a free fruit bowl. Now, that's not really going to cut it, is it? So let's start with the topic. I know you have a lot of personal perspective on, Chelsea, and that's remote work, because this has become one of the most loaded conversations in the profession. Bringing them back to work, the return to the office mandate, firms are pulling back hard, some are leaning in. Where do you come down on this?
Yeah, I do have a lot of feelings and opinions on this. So some of my own experience is I run a fully remote team, and I have for a really long time now. And when I first stepped into the role, I had some of the same concerns that firm leaders have. How do we build a culture when we're not all together in the same room? How do I onboard someone and have them actually feel like they belong to something?
So what did you find?
I found that most of those fears were really fears about losing control. And
control. Yeah.
The solution is not more visibility. It's really more clarity on my part. When expectations are clear, when communication rhythms are consistent, and when people feel genuinely connected to the mission of what they're doing, remote work works really well. In some ways, I think it's better than in person because you're forced to be intentional about all of those things instead of just assuming proximity is doing the work for you.
That's such an interesting reframe. You're saying basically proximity is the substitute for intentionality.
Yeah, a lot of firms have operated for years on the assumption that if people were in the office, something good must be happening. And remote work during COVID exposed how much of that was really just an assumption.
Yeah, and I hear the word trust a lot when it comes to hybrid and remote working, and you said it earlier, that control. So let's talk about why remote work matters for talent acquisition, especially, and the employer brand, because this is where I think the business case is strong for firms that really want to get that best talent.
Yeah, it's huge. I think smaller and mid-sized firms especially are leaving opportunity on the table here. If your firm is in a smaller market, your local talent pool has a ceiling. There are only so many qualified accountants within commuting distance of your firm. Remote work blows that ceiling off. You can hire someone in a different state, a different region, someone who would never have found you otherwise. And the data really reflects that firms have moved in that direction. 92% of our firms now offer a work from home option. But an option to work from home is still different than creating a fully remote culture.
Yeah, that's a good distinction. Some firms still treat it like a perk, though, and they're doing you a favor. They're granting that rather than it being a fundamental structural part of how they work.
Yes. And I think that's where the mindset really needs to shift. Younger professionals especially are not evaluating flexibility as a bonus. They're really evaluating it as the baseline. If your firm doesn't offer it, you're not even in the conversation for a meaningful portion of the talent pool.
Yeah. And I had a conversation with Jeff Phillips, who runs Accounting Fly, and they have job boards of thousands of accountants, qualified people that are only willing to work remotely. And if you don't tap into that, if you are set on getting people in the office, you're going to miss out on so much talent. So let's hit the work-life balance side of this, because it connects directly, not just to recruitment, but to the retention and turnover piece.
Yeah, and something I feel really strongly about. When people have flexibility over where and sometimes when they work, they really invest more, not less. And there's a reciprocity that happens. The firms trust them, and then they rise to meet that trust. What remote work gives, it really gives people time. Time they would have spent commuting, time they can use to pick up their kids or go to a doctor's appointment or just recharge a little in the middle of the day. And that time adds up to a quality of life that people genuinely do not want to give up once they have it.
And you touched on family there, Chelsea. You and me are both parents. And if you ask a lot of people why they work so hard, why they spend so long qualifying, it's to bring up a family or to be there for the children or even caring for elderly relatives. There's all these things that you want time for. And that's exactly why firms that are trying to pull it back, they're running into resistance. Come back to the office. No, we're not playing that game anymore.
Yeah. Once people have experienced that flexibility, it becomes part of how they think about their career. And firms that take that away are making a retention decision, whether they realize that decision is related to retention or not.
And we got to mention the pandemic here, because this changed the game, didn't it? It showed everybody that it was possible to work effectively away from the office.
Yes. They always say, you know, it's harder to take away a benefit once you've added it. You know, the cat's out of the bag. We all worked remotely for, you know, months, if not years, and did it productively. Firms grew revenue, retained clients. And so employees are looking at that saying, it worked well for that time. Why can't we continue to utilize that?
Yeah. So let's get into the hard stuff then. This is where you're brilliant, Chelsea, you and your team. You look at the numbers. You mentioned accountability. You mentioned culture as two key challenges with remote work. Let's start with the first one of those. Accountability. You hear it such a lot in leadership. What does that actually look like, say, when it goes wrong?
So when it goes wrong, it looks like a manager who doesn't know what their people are working on. Not because the people aren't working, but because the communication structure isn't there to surface the work product. In an office, you get a lot of informal information. You may overhear a conversation. You notice somebody looks really stressed. You bump into somebody in the hallway and they give you a quick update. But remote work strips out all of that. And if you don't replace it with something intentional, you end up really flying blind.
So if you were being intentional, what would replace that?
Consistency and structure. So regular check-ins that aren't just about tasks, but how people are doing. Also clear goals that are outcome-based rather than hours-based. Project visibility tools so that everybody knows what's in motion and what the status is. And managers who are actually trained to manage remotely, which is really a very different skill set than managing in person.
That last point's really important. A lot of firms promote people into management based on how long they've been there or technical skills, and they assume that the people management, the leadership piece, that's just going to happen.
Yeah, we had a whole conversation about that recently. And, you know, that track was already a problem before remote work. I think remote work is just making it more visible. If you have a weak manager in an office, you could sometimes paper over it with that proximity, but remote work exposes it really fast.
Yeah. So we've hit accountability. Let's talk about culture, that soup. that binding, that bond, that let's bring everyone together. Because what I hear a lot from firm leaders is this is the thing that they worry about, particularly when everything gets remote and dispersed. So how do firms build that sense of shared identity when the people aren't physically together, bumping into each other at the water cooler, having coffees, having those informal conversations?
Yeah, and this one is harder, and I won't pretend that it's not. Culture in a remote work environment requires an active investment. It does not just happen. Something I found that works is being really deliberate about connection points that are about work. So virtual touch points where the agenda is really just getting to know each other, celebrating milestones visibly. Oh my gosh, you had a birthday, or you just bought a new car, or your child just turned four. Making sure that people feel recognized, not just for what they produce, but for who they are. And honestly, getting together in person periodically still does matter. I'm not saying remote means don't ever see each other. I think the most successful remote teams use intentional in-person time for culture building and relationship deepening, and then the trust for the remote day-to-day execution.
We know many of you listen to this podcast on the go, driving to work, working out, even doing chores. Now you can get CPE credit for that time. With Earmark, you can earn free NASBA-approved CPE for listening to the Inside Public Accounting podcast. After you listen to an episode, take a quiz, and your certificate will be ready. Earmark has courses for everyone in your firm, from staff to partners. Get started today at earmark.app or download the free app on the App Store.
We talk a lot about transparency as well, Chelsea. It's been really honest with you. Hybrid work gives us some advantages, there's some disadvantages as well. Let's communicate, let's stay open. That plays into this, doesn't it? Transparency.
Absolutely.
So when we look at remote versus in person, is it that simple? Is it that black and white? Is it just being thoughtful about what each mode does best or picking one or the other?
I think the firms that are struggling with remote culture are usually the ones who went fully remote without replacing the cultural infrastructure that used to live in the office. Yeah. You can't just remove the office and then expect everything to look the same. You have to rebuild it differently and intentionally.
That's really practical. And I think that framing that remote doesn't mean unmanaged is going to land for a lot of firm leaders that are skeptical. So let's shift, Chelsea, around the broader benefits landscape now, because there's a lot of interesting work done in your IPA and HR report about what firms are offering and where those gaps are.
Yeah, I think it's helpful to think about this in layers. There are the table stakes benefits that almost every firm offers. Then there are the differentiators where firms are starting to pull apart. And then there are the gaps where there are some pretty meaningful opportunities that are being left on the table.
I love that phrase, table stakes. We don't say it much in the UK. I coined a phrase once, good gets you in the game, but great gets you the trophy or the medal or the podium. So we want to go from good to great. Table stakes just gets you on the field of play. So what does that look like here?
So that is dental and vision coverage. They're essentially universal at 97 and 95% of firms respectively. And most of our firms that participate are US-based firms. So if you're listening from outside of the United States, some of this with our benefits and our healthcare system may seem a little wild, but these are mostly US companies. 401k plans are at 93% of firms that have them, with an average match of 3%, which really has crept up from an average of 2% back in 2020. So a little bit more of a match for the 401k. And then life insurance and disability coverage are also very broadly offered across firms. The work from home option we discussed at 92%, and flex time schedules are at 90% of firms. So those are no longer differentiators. If you don't have them, you're really behind.
Yeah, that you're going to be irrelevant. You're going to find it really hard to compete in the marketplace. You're going to have to offer a lot more money to get the same people. So what we get from that, the floor has risen significantly, Chelsea.
It has. What was considered a progressive benefit 5 years ago is really now a baseline expectation. And the firms that are treating these things as special offerings are misreading the market.
There's a parallel too with what we offer clients. What used to wow clients and was great yesterday becomes good today and average tomorrow because everyone jumps in and does it. So what are firms starting to differentiate then? Where are they getting their edge?
One of the big ones is parental leave. The data here, I think, is really encouraging. 67% of firms now offer paid maternity leave averaging 8 weeks, and 59% offer paid paternity leave averaging 5 weeks, which is up a week from last year. So I think that movement matters. It signals that firms are recognizing the full arc of people's lives and not just their availability during busy season. So employee wellness programs are offered at 51% of firms. Tuition reimbursement is also offered at 51% of firms, with an average of about $5,200 per employee. And 76% of firms offer a CPA exam bonus, averaging about $3,000.
That CPA bonus, exam bonus, is interesting because there's been so much conversation about the pipeline problem in accounting, the 150 hours. Are we bringing them out of university? Are we getting them through their qualifications? Are you saying firms are using that strategically to encourage people to complete those credentials?
I think some firms are, but there are also some that aren't. The firms that are doing it well aren't just offering the bonus. They're pairing it with defined timeframes for completing the exam, which our data shows averages about 26 months, and a structured study time or exam reimbursement on top of that bonus. I think bundling all those things together signals an investment in the employee. The bonus alone without a support structure sometimes can come off a little hollow.
That makes sense. We want you. We want to support you. We want to nurture you. We want to hold your hand. We know how difficult the exams are. We're going to help you get through them. And where are they going to go afterwards? They're going to stay with that firm, the backman, the whole time. So that's good. Let's talk about where the gaps are. I think this is a real opportunity for firms that really want to differentiate without hopefully spending too much.
Yeah. The one number that really surprised me was the elder care leave. Only 6% of firms offer elder care leave. And when you think about many mid-career professionals who are simultaneously raising kids and caring for aging parents, only 6% feels pretty significant. Firms that step into that space might stand out.
That's fascinating. There's a phrase we have called the pivot generation, which are people in their 50s and 60s. They're looking after young children or teenagers. So there's pressure there. They're looking after elderly parents, there's pressure there. They're at the height of their earning power, so they're under huge pressure at work. And it is a holistic approach. And it's a very undeserved need, is that elderly care.
Yeah. Another one is staff sabbaticals, only offered at 10% of firms, and partner sabbaticals at 11% of firms. For a profession that has a real burnout problem, those numbers feel low. And childcare or daycare reimbursement is only at 12%. Which again, given what we know about the barriers for working parents, that seems like a missed opportunity.
Yeah, I agree with that. The need to recharge, renewal. Okay, so let's get into the section I think many firm leaders are going to find actionable. Low investment, high impact benefits. They don't cost you a lot, but they make a big difference because not every firm has big budgets to add major programs and incentives. But some of the most powerful things, Chelsea, we're hoping don't cost too much at all.
Yeah, and this is where I get excited because I think firms often assume that to compete on benefits, they have to spend a lot of money, but that's just not true. So let's start with summer hours. Only 61% of firms offer them. That cost is essentially nothing. You're not adding an expense. You're just redistributing when work happens during a part of the year where the pace tends to be slower anyways. But the signal to staff is really large. It says, we trust you and we recognize that your life outside of work matters. So take some time to recharge.
Yeah, it's better than a free fruit bowl. It probably costs very little in actual productivity too.
It costs almost nothing. And the goodwill return is disproportionate to the cost. Another one is stay interviews. Only 50% of firms conduct them. So a stay interview is just a structured conversation with somebody who is still at your firm, asking them what would make them want to stay and what might cause them to leave. It costs nothing but the manager's time, and the intelligence you get from it can be really valuable. You might find out about problems before they become resignations and turnover.
That's such a simple idea, but how powerful is that? And you're saying half the profession are not doing that?
Right. And another one that firms could invest in would be exit interviews. That's fine, but by the time someone is sitting in an exit interview, you've already lost them. So stay interviews let you intervene while you still can.
Yeah, that's proactive. That makes complete sense. Another phrase I heard a lot that leaders should ask is when they're remote is, have you got everything you need to be doing your job? And just flagging up problems ahead of time so that they don't become a leaving issue. So great. We're starting to get a wonderful full picture here, Chelsea. Anything else?
Yeah, I've got one more. Formal mentoring programs. So 71% of firms have them, which is good. But what we know from conversations with firms is having a mentoring program and having a mentoring program that actually work are two very different things. So a mentoring program that's just a name on an org chart, that really doesn't do too much. A mentoring program with structured touch points, clear expectations, and actual investment from senior leaders is a retention and development tool that will pay off for years.
Yeah, and that's not just having the check boxes. It's saying we've got a mentoring program and put that on your website. It's the quality, the intention, the buy-in from leaders that goes behind that.
It is. And I will add one more bonus one here. Employee referral programs, because 90% of firms already have them, which is great. But among smaller firms, the bonuses are lower and often the program visibility is lower too. So if you have good people, they often know other good people. So making your referral program visible and rewarding enough to make it actually activate your team as recruiters is a high return on investment.
Yeah, there's another stat too, which is your network is bigger when you're under 30 than when you're over 40 and 50, because we're fresh out of university. We've still got a big social circle. We know a lot of people like us, and we're really connected on LinkedIn, and we're very intentional with keeping those connections open. So why not step into that? I love that.
And a $5,000 or $10,000 referral bonus is significantly less expensive than the cost to leave the role open and to bring on somebody new that may or may not work out. So those referral bonuses are small in comparison to the potential costs.
Small in comparison to, Chelsea, to recruitment fees. If you go to a headhunter or a recruitment firm to find you somebody, you might be paying a third to a half of the first year salary. So yeah, exactly. That does make sense. Nothing against recruitment companies. We've all got a role to play. So the line here is that there's a lot of impactful things that these employees care about that are not big on the budget, but you can be really intentional about with making your firm an attractive place to work.
I think that's exactly it. The firms that win on talent are the ones that are spending the most on their benefits. They're the ones being the most thoughtful about the full experience that the employees have at their firm, from how people are onboarded to how they're managed to whether they feel seen and developed and trusted in their job. So benefits are a part of that picture, but so is flexibility and culture and whether somebody feels like their manager actually knows them. All of those things together are what makes a firm somewhere that people genuinely want to be.
Yeah. And for family leaders listening, the question worth sitting with is probably not what benefits do we offer, but what is the actual experience of working here and how are we being intentional about building something that people want to stay inside of, they want to be a part of? You spoke about it earlier, Chelsea. Is there a vision? Is there a story that I feel I'm contributing to? That kind of meaning and purpose, we've not mentioned it as such, but that's a big part of the mix.
Yeah, I think that's the great question. And the data that we have, that gives you benchmarks, but only you know the gap between what your firm says it offers and what people actually experience on a day-to-day basis.
Yeah, this has been a really rich conversation, Chelsea. Thank you, as always, not just for picking the conversations that accounting leaders really want to hear, but for bringing the data and the real-world perspective to it.
I always enjoy it. This was a fun one.
Well, if today's episode has resonated with you, please share it with your leadership team. These are not small decisions. These are big, impactful ones. The benefits and choices around culture and packages that your firms make right now are going to shape who stays and who walks through the door. And we would love to hear from you. What benefits are making the biggest difference at your firm? There's a lot of imaginative and innovative things going on out there, and we'd love to know what you're experimenting with. So leave a comment or reach us through Inside Public Accounting on LinkedIn. And if you haven't already, subscribe and follow the podcast so you never miss an episode. We'll see you on the next episode of the Inside Public Accounting podcast.
Thanks, everybody, for listening.